Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello. Welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with Sky Sports and NFL UK. We are sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network, and we got lots to talk about in Week 10. It was another Wembley weekend with the Dallas Cowboys beating the Jacksonville Jaguars. But my usual partner is with me, and he's been celebrating. Jeff Rimebold, let's go north of the border first to Canada. And you guys won the division last week, right?
Yeah, we did. We had it. We're facing a crazy situation. It never happened in the history of the CFL, over 110 years of pro football, that a team could, if they lose, be eliminated from the playoffs. If they win, make the playoffs. And if they win by more than eight, clinch the division crown. And we beat Montreal 29-15 at home to secure the Eastern Division in a bye week. And so I'm sitting here in a coffee shop in South Bend, Indiana, listening to, I think it's Depeche Mode they got on them, on the sound system right now. But it's awesome to have a week off and a chance to have a home field advantage in the Eastern Final in 2 weeks.
All right, so we'll stick with the musical theme then, because I've just come into our studios here in London. I've just tried to walk from where I dumped my coat into the studio where we record this, and I literally went through the door and bumped straight into Gary Barlow of Take That. So I'm sure Gary Barlow has just gone back on the radio in the other studio. So
he just said he ran into Neil.
Bumped into Neil
NFL UK, Sky Sports.
Just bumped into Neil Reynolds.
He's probably so excited he can't speak right now.
I bet he's starstruck. Starstruck. He's like, is that you from the Inside the Huddle podcast, right?
All you got to ask him is, hey, have you ever stood up in front of a half a million people?
Yeah,
and
there you go.
Did your thing?
There you go, Gary. Pick the bones out of that, son. Jeff, we're going to talk about lots of stuff going on around the NFL. We're not going to get into every game, but we'll look at some of the big topics as usual. We'll take some listener questions in the mailbag, and we will talk about the Dallas Cowboys and Jacksonville Jaguars at Wembley Stadium. But I want to start with the news that, since we last spoke, they've announced the three games for 2015. So in week four, the Miami Dolphins are the home team against the New York Jets. Week seven next year, the Jacksonville Jaguars are the home team against the Buffalo Bills. And week eight, the Kansas City Chiefs are the home team against the Detroit Lions. And Jeff, I wanted to, you can talk about any of those games, but I was going to highlight to you, you worked for the Chiefs, you coached for the Chiefs. If we ever want an example that the NFL is behind this international expansion, surely it's there in the Kansas City Chiefs giving up a home game. Because tell us what it's like at Arrowhead Stadium on game day.
Oh, well, I'm going to tell you something now. When there's 85,000 people in that stadium and they do the national anthem and at the end where they go, and the home of the, and everybody goes, Chiefs. I mean, it's one of those, as we say in Hawaii, chicken skin moments where the hair on the back of your neck stands up. And it is an incredible, the tailgating starts Saturday morning. They're there barbecuing. I mean, it is an event. It's a weekly event. I think that one is significant. And then the other one that's significant to me, Neil, is if you think about the Dolphins being willing to give up a home game in the division, right, against their hated rival, the Jets. And New York, there are a ton of displaced New Yorkers, retired New Yorkers in South Florida. So the Jets have a big following down there. So to take that game away from, Miami and bring it to London, I think, again, speaks volumes of what the teams feel about this experience coming to London.
And we get back-to-back games next year as well. It's going to be it's a test of the fan base. It's a test of the Wembley playing surface. It's a test of the NFL UK staff putting it together and the New York staff. Again, it's just further testing of this market, I guess.
Well, I think so. And I think that, Alistair Kirkwood and the people at NFL UK and the fans in the UK and everybody involved in the games, broadcast of the games, everything, has passed every test with flying colors that they've had placed in front of them in the years that this has been going on. And I think, the NFL, Peter King tweeted out a statistic, and I don't know if this is accurate or not, but over $300 million of revenue just on ticket sales alone in the Wembley series. So obviously this is a huge success for the National Football League.
Jeff, you'll be in this studio not too long now until you get over here and work for us on Sky Sports, and we're working together in the studios. And then when we record this podcast, you can come down here and we'll record these podcasts face-to-face in the studio. I just want to let you know, take that, I've just nicked your chair. They just came in and took the chair that you sit in. So I'm all on my own. I've only got one chair, but it's just so you know, we need to get your... Oh, hang on. No, you always say that there's no your name's not on the back of the chair, is it?
Yeah, your name's never on the back of your chair. That is a very fitting... That's almost ironic because that's what we say all the time. I say it to the players as we come to training camp. I said, everybody look at the chair in front of them and see if there's a name on the back of it. And they all look at me like I'm out of my mind. And I said, that's life in pro football. Your name is not on the back of your chair and that there's going to be a guy sitting in there as soon as you leave, and there was a guy in there before you got here. So that's just the transient existence, and, you know, you recognize that it's you know, NFL, and it's not for long. That's how long you have in the league.
Well, yeah, it certainly is that way in podcast recording, clearly, as well. So let's look at some of the games then and some of the issues from Week 10 in the NFL. It was another great week in London. I mean, we had... I got to work quite closely with Emmitt Smith and Michael Irvin. We held a fan forum on the Saturday before the game. Just to hear those guys telling some of the stories was incredible. The game itself was a tremendous, tremendous atmosphere at Wembley Stadium. And I think the NFL, you know this, Jeff, the NFL balance entertainment with paying tribute to things just about right. And it was Remembrance Sunday here in the UK, where we pay tribute to, you know, fallen servicemen and women from previous wars. And the NFL, I thought they hit the balance just right. There was entertainment. There were poppies flying in the air. There was an impeccably, as you would expect, an impeccably observed minute silence. There were military guys giving readings. You know, before we even got to the game, you had those moments you just talked about, you know, the hairs on the back of your neck standing up. Yeah, it's just what the NFL does, isn't it? They put on a great show, but they do it, if they have to be solemn within that show, they can pull that off somehow as well, which is a tricky thing to do.
Yeah, you know what? You got to give the people credit in the New York office and in the London office for putting on, you know, you got to understand that for the casual fan, now, for guys like you and I who love the game as much as we love the game and look at the game more from a technical standpoint, I guess, but, you know, we're going to enjoy the game no matter what, whether there was no cheerleaders, no bands, no fanfare, no. I mean, I just love the game. But for the casual fan, it's about the experience. I hear the NFL talk about this all the time, the fan experience. And it's more than just the game. And, you know, again, I think they do strike a tremendous balance between entertainment and football. And football is entertainment ultimately, but, you know, every fan that comes to the game, whether it's your first time experience with football, or, you know, the NFL experience, or you're a dyed-in-the-wool NFL fan, we want to have it just like our broadcast. You know, we want that to be, you know, accessible and entertaining and stimulating, and want everybody to want to come back again or tune in again. And that's our challenge as we go about building the game internationally.
We talked about the last game of. There is a band. We, the NFL internationally and these games, is a bit of a bandwagon that people want to jump on. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago in the podcast. More politicians getting involved, more political support across the government now. And I noticed that with this game as well, Jeff. And we'll talk about the actual game in a minute, which is the important part. But pre-game, there was, you know, you had the Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, petitioning to be, you know, campaigning and petitioning to be the one that tossing the coin and getting that done before the kickoff. You've got Jose Mourinho, the Chelsea manager, standing there chatting to Jerry Jones. You've got the star striker for Manchester City, Sergio Aguero, was there walking along the sidelines. They're not things that will change your perception when you're watching the game at home. You're watching the game and you're looking for the X's and O's and all the things you like. But to me, they are just indications that this is a must-see event now.
That's exactly correct. And I think it has become as you use the term, must-see event, it's become something that, you know, this is certainly not a criticism. It's just a reality of the world. The politicians don't get involved. They're not going to put their face out there, their stamp on this, if they don't think it has lasting power or if that, you know, their constituents aren't going to see that as a positive. And for, you know, a gentleman like Jose Mourinho to be on the sideline with Jerry Jones, that speaks volumes about how the game and this event is perceived in the in the athletic community, if you will. And it would be the same thing here in the United States if at an MLS game, you know, you had Tony Romo and Jerry Jones on the sidelines watching an MLS game. I mean, that's just, it adds to the star power. It adds to the you know, I guess it confirms the validity of the gravity of the event.
Yeah. Looking at the actual game itself, Dallas won 31-17. Their big stars showed up. Tony Romo had his most efficient game of the season. Dez Bryant had 6 catches, 158 yards, 2 touchdowns, all in the second quarter. And DeMarco Murray had an even 100 yards rushing. There were a couple of things that struck me in this game, Jeff. Jacksonville led early, 7-3. They forced the Cowboys to punt. And then Ace Sanders fumbles near his own goal line at the 6-yard line, gifted a touchdown to Dallas. Then trailing 17-7 in the first half, Blake Bortles throws a 53-yard pass to Cecil Shorts, gets the Jags into scoring range before the break, and then Denard Robinson fumbles on the next play. I looked at this Jags team. They're so young. You know, 30 of their 53 player roster are first or second year guys, and I don't think they could recover or were good enough to recover from those. They were real body blows at key times.
Well, you break the game down statistically, and like you say, that those kinds of errors become critical mistakes when you're a team trying to get over the hump. You know, Jacksonville had 20 first downs, Dallas was 16 in the game.
Yeah.
You know, and but you look at the areas where a mature football team, and whether it's a physically mature team or a team that's, you know, emotionally mature football team, I always look at the rushing. And, you know, Dallas rushed the ball 30 times for 151 yards. Jacksonville 24 for 71. And so that speaks volumes to me about the where both of those teams are. Yeah. And, you know, you give up 4 sacks like they did, like Jacksonville did. Those are, again, areas where they need to improve. They're young in the offensive line. They're not as good as they need to be. Dallas has invested draft choices and money in their offensive line in the last 5 years, and it shows. That's the way they play, and that's the easiest barometer of where a team is when you look at those statistics. Do you give up sacks? Can you run the football?
And yeah.
No matter what you do offensively, if you can do those two things well, not get your quarterback hit and run the ball, you're going to have a chance to succeed. I still say I believe in what Gus is doing there. I think the organization's heading in the right direction. It's just, can they get enough success to get some traction to keep the players believing in the formula?
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to Gus a lot last week, and we were either recording things on the record or we were chatting off the record a lot of time. And we chatted off the record at one point, and you know, we were just talking, and we were talking about his team. And I said, you know, you are so young, and it must be a constant challenge to keep them together and keep them believe, because he's very consistent with this message. And I know the good coaches are. You deliver a message, this is the path, and we're not going to stray from it. And he said they really have bought into, you know, this is a long-term build here, and we are going to have to be patient, and they're going to have to be resilient. And I think they have been for the most part this year. I think they lost a little bit of that at Wembley Stadium, but that's to be expected with a young team as well. And you're right about the offensive line, Jeff. I thought Tony Romo looked in warm-ups. We were down on the sidelines, of course, broadcasting again from the sidelines. He looked uncomfortable. He didn't look like he was going to be moving freely, but he didn't get put on the ground until about a minute left in the first half. And it was an incomplete pass, and he threw the ball away, and he got knocked to the ground, and he honestly took about 30 seconds to get off the floor. Then it went to halftime, and they came out after the break, and Romo looked like an old man jogging back out onto the field. He was really uncomfortable, but they just didn't get him on the floor enough. They didn't test that bad back. That was a credit to, there was a lot of screen passes to DeMarco Murray. There was some quick slants to Dez. It was hard to get to Romo, but the offensive line did a good job as well.
Yeah, the offensive line did a good job, and I think the offensive coordinator JC did a good job of protecting him with their calls. Like you said, the ball was out fast. They used screens. They tried to play action, do things that will slow down the rush. You know, here's the thing, again, as we talk about Jacksonville, and I know there are a lot of Jags fans in the UK, and, you know, when Gus came from Seattle, he came from a winning organization. So there was a sense of, hey, this guy's been there, done that, right? Which is really, really important, because that buys you time in the locker room as you go through this process of turning your team. It's much like our season this year. We start 1-6, but we had been to the Grey Cup last year. We've been to the Super Bowl of our league last year. Mm. So the players didn't doubt the message, because there was validity in what we spoke, right? Now, for Gus, the tough thing is going to be, as the losses mount, you're further and further away from that point of credibility.
Yeah.
And so they need to get some successes, even if they're just small wins, to continue to keep the players believing in where they're going. Because I truly do believe if they can get enough time, the way they're going and the way they drafted and some of those other things, that, you know, that they can be a player in the National Football League. Mm. They can be a player in, when it comes to playoffs in the future.
All right, let's look at some of the other games from around the NFL in Week 10. And I wanted to talk about Detroit beating the Miami Dolphins from a... There's one thing I wanted to talk about. We said this before, Jeff. We don't go into every single thing of every game. But the touchdown pass that Matthew Stafford threw to win that game, don't know if you've seen it, but he's running away from pressure, and he kind of sidearms it to Theo Riddick in the end zone for the touchdown. Now, I was at Detroit's practice a few weeks ago, and I saw Stafford throwing the football quite a bit. Or I thought he was messing about. He was throwing it sidearm to guys. I saw it in training camp in Detroit in the summer. And we asked him to throw some footballs out into the crowd in Trafalgar Square at the fan rally. And he threw them sidearm about 60 yards. Now, I actually now think, okay, this sidearm thing with Matthew Stafford, and we've seen him use it in games before. He practices that. There was method to his madness. And there he is in a game using it to go and win the game.
Well, you know what, Neil, one of the things you talk about with a quarterback all the time is the ability to throw with different arm angles.
Yeah.
Right? If you look at Peyton, for example, he has that high over-the-top, hand-on-top-of-the-ball delivery, right, which is classic NFL, right? That's classic arm angle. But the reality of it is, in games, because you have to throw around defenders, you have to throw on the run, you need to practice throwing the ball at different arm angles. And that, like you say, that's really good coaching. That's really good quarterback coaching when you get your guy to work at those different arm angles. I remember going to see the San Francisco 49ers in training camp when Jeff Garcia was there, and Mariucci had him doing a number of things in practice where he threw the ball sometimes almost underhand, you know, where he's, you know, around defenders, on the run to his left, on the run to his right. You know, the reality of it is you're not very much, very often anymore, going to stand in a clean pocket and deliver. So, again, that really came home at the most critical time when he's able to throw that ball to Riddick and win the game. I thought, you know, here's an interesting thing about the Lions for me. And I'm really happy for Glenn Shield, who works for us in the broadcast. Because he's been a long-suffering Lions fan like me. And, you know, the thing that Jim Caldwell has brought them better discipline. He's brought them stability. But, you know, you think about Jim Caldwell, and he's this stone-faced guy that shows little emotion, much out of the Tony Dungy school. Mm. But, heck, he runs two fake punts in the game.
Yeah.
So he's not afraid.
No.
He's not afraid to go, you know, to play for the win. You know what I'm saying? He's not out there just trying not to lose the game. So, you know, it was a great win for the Lions, you know, a tough loss for the Dolphins because they're still in the playoff run, I think. But if you're a Lions fan, shoot, this puts them in great position now. If they can, you look at their schedule going down the stretch, they conceivably could have the home field. If they stay winning the games that they should win, they should have home field advantage through the playoffs.
Peter King was writing this week, Jeff, in his Monday Morning Quarterback column about Jim Caldwell, and there was a wonderful line in there about the discipline that he's installed in this team. We're seeing it. We're seeing the mental toughness. That's 3 weeks in a row, or three games in a row, they've come back in the fourth quarter and won. And apparently Jim Caldwell, twice per week in team meetings, so he gets the PR guys to find clippings of somebody famous doing something stupid so that he can reinforce that message to his team that if you mess up, and you know, it's going to be out there publicly, and you know, you're going to damage the whole team. So, you know, again, it's just another example. And I go back to what I said at the time when he was hired. I fully hold my hand up now. At the time, I was like, really? It's a bit of a retread, and must be hard for young coaches to get a head coaching job because these veteran coaches go round and around. Well, boy, was I wrong on that one, because he's exactly what the doctor ordered for the Lions.
Well, you know what? He's been in two really tough situations.
Yep.
Obviously, the Colts situation that he had to go through was a really difficult time. Mm. But if you trace his history back, he was the head coach at Wake Forest in the ACC, which is a very, very good football league. North Carolina, North Carolina State, Miami, Florida State, all those schools, Maryland. I mean, very, very good football. And Wake Forest has this, I think, if not the smallest, one of the smallest enrollments in college football. Less than 5,000 students go there. Mm. It's a very small, very exclusive school with very difficult academic standards. So, they have no reason to win. Well, he had them winning and competitive in the bad years, winning in the good years when he was at Wake Forest. So, obviously, he's no dummy. I mean, he's got a track record. And like you say, I think the discipline thing is the thing that's changed so much about the Lions, because those were the games in the past where the Lions would have a stupid penalty, a roughness call, they'd blow a coverage,
yep,
give up a sack or whatever. And, you know, he's playing with some guys. You know, you look at Dominic Raiola at center, you know, Dom's a Hawaii kid and a great, I love him to death, but he's way at the end of his career. So, you know, he's patching together a football team on the offensive line and they're winning games, and that's all that matters. Do you win games?
Jeff, I want to move on to the Arizona Cardinals in just a second, but we do go kind of all over the place with this podcast and talk about issues. I like to throw in suggestions and then you tell me it's impossible to do from a football point of view. I think I mentioned about coaches clocking in and out one time for their hours. But I watched this game at Wembley. Let me just go back to the game at Wembley for a second. There were two occasions when there were fumbles. And it was, I thought that there was the guy who was obviously, there was one where it looked like a Jacksonville dived on the football. And then there was no decisiveness from the officials in terms of blowing the whistle. And then what we had was about 3 minutes of guys, you know, piling up and goodness knows what they were doing to each other at the bottom of the pile. And then it happened again. Dallas fumbled the football and we couldn't really tell who'd got the ball. And there was no decision made, and they let them fight for about 2 or 3 minutes again. And I didn't play at any great level, but I've been at the bottom of a pile when I lost a fumble in a game, and I was like, I can't let that guy stay with the football, and I was doing all sorts to get the football back. In this time of player safety, should we maybe, if we don't know who's got the football, just leave it with the offense if it's at the bottom of a pile, or is that just me being thinking about it a bit too much?
Well, I tell you what, that's an interesting concept because, you know, we are so concerned about player safety and all of a sudden the ball's on the ground and guys are diving in their head first and, you know, pulling guys off by the neck, by the leg. But it is one of those tough situations because, you know, at the bottom of that pile, it's a free-for-all for the ball. Mm. And what the officials try and do is peel off as many players as they can quickly. But, you know, the players
don't want to be peeled off.
The players are instructed to get in the scrum, and you know, if you can't get the ball, pull the other guy off the ball. And you know, it is a situation where you do see guys hurt in those pileups sometimes, and that's something that I think the NFL needs to address in terms of the, you know, additional guys on the pile, guys jumping in when they have no chance of recovering the ball, but they're just jumping in to try and keep somebody else off of the football. And, you know, it's an interesting comment. I, you know, it's not something I thought about very much, but we had the same thing happen in our game this weekend on a ball in the end zone where we recovered for a touchdown on a screen pass that went bad for Montreal. And it's a free for all in there. There's guys diving in head first and doing things that would be, you know, flagged if they were, you know, standing on their feet hitting a guy.
Yeah. I mean, if this one gets passed, Jeff, I mean, we've had the Rooney rule. This one could be the Reynolds rule. Or if you're on board as well, I don't mind it being the Reynolds-Reinbold rule.
Nah, man, no, that's all right.
I'll take this one, shall I?
You're the one that came up with it. I'm not freeloading off your idea.
That means you don't really buy into it.
No, that doesn't mean I don't buy. No, Neil, I don't want to hitch my star to your genius. Blaze my own throat.
All right, man. Carson Palmer goes down with a torn ACL, or we think it's going to be a torn ACL. Bruce Arians says, we can win the Super Bowl with Drew Stanton. I mean, on that. Of course he's going to say that. We're not about to say we're going to fold up the tent and give up. But this one makes me, these ones, Jeff, I mean, any injury is bad. But I hate to see good players go down when they're in the middle of good years on a team that is being, no, they're not a Cinderella story, but they are a, they're a good story this year, the Arizona Cardinals. Those kind of injuries, they must be so frustrating.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. If you're Carson Palmer, think about this one. When you're in Cincinnati, you sign a big contract, right? And what happens? Boom.
Yeah,
down.
Blows his knee out.
Leg injury.
Same one.
Now you go in Arizona, sign a huge contract. Bam, what happened? Leg injury. Mm. So I think Carson Palmer ought to just make handshake agreements with his contract from now on, because he's like, he's allergic to pens. Yeah. I'm telling you, it's crazy. This sets up a really delicious, delicious game this weekend between the Cardinals and the Lions, because Drew Stanton played at Michigan State. He was a backup for the Lions. And when he was with the Lions, obviously he's not going to play when Matt Stafford's healthy. And he was frustrated and wanted an opportunity. So he leaves the Lions to go. So he goes to Arizona thinking that he's going to have a better chance to play. Lo and behold, who's he going to start his first NFL game against? The Lions, his hometown team. And, you know, he's expecting a baby, I think, in the next 2 days. So he's got a pretty eventful week. His first start as an NFL quarterback, a second child coming, and it's going to be against a team that didn't think he was good enough to play for him. So it's all the irony that you look for in a game. It'll be interesting to see how he does.
Yeah, a couple of other bits of things that caught my eye. Jeff, looking back at week 10 in the NFL, terrible performance from Andy Dalton. There's no way to sugarcoat that in the loss on Thursday night to the Cleveland Browns. And I guess a terrible performance from the Chicago Bears as well. That 106 points they've given up in their last two games. I mean, two pretty high-profile failures there. Your thoughts on those?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. What concern? Obviously, Aaron Rodgers is a hot quarterback. He faced Brady and Rodgers back-to-back weekend. Mm. That's a recipe for getting toasted. But when you saw Jordy Nelson running free like he was running free in those games, you got to wonder what in the heck is going on. Now, this is 2 years we've watched this with the Bears. Mm. And, you know, right now, and I watch Mark's press conference, and I know Mark very well, and I know his body language. He is really, really, really hurting right now because the offense isn't playing at the level. He averaged 29 points a game last year, and they're not. They're turning the ball over. He hasn't gotten Cutler to the next level, which is what, you know, everybody anticipated he would do because of his relationship with Jay. The offensive line is struggling worse than they have, worse than they did last year. They've taken a step back. But defensively, to give up 27, 50, and 50, I don't know, 51 and 50 in back-to-back weeks, I think it's 106 points in 2 weekends.
That's right.
You know, that's bad. And you look at, they went out and Jared Allen comes in and they spend a bunch of money to get him. How much production have they gotten from him? Mm. Keith Bostic, the first round draft choice, McClellan. I mean, Phil Emery's got some, it's got some, you know, not just, you know, it's not just the defensive coordinator. It's the whole organization's got some questions to answer about what's happened to that defense, because, you know, what was it, 2 years ago that the Bears were winning games 10-7, you know, with a fantastic defense.
All those
and now they can't
overs, yeah.
stop anybody. I mean, can't stop anybody.
We will look at the offensive side of it as well. I mean, the secondary, you're right, the secondary was non-existent. You've talked in the past about the run defense being a problem, but yeah, and they gave up 6 first-half touchdowns to Aaron Rodgers. But I just looked at the numbers here, Jeff, as well. And again, another game where Jay Cutler didn't play very well. And we know that he's got talent around him. Martellus Bennett can make plays. Matt Forte is a Pro Bowler. Alshon Jeffrey is a Pro Bowler. So is Brandon Marshall. And I look back and think back to Lovie Smith when he got fired by the Chicago Bears. And Lovie Smith, part of his thing when he went into Chicago was, we have to beat Green Bay. I mean, it is just a big thing. They're rivals. They are old rivals who go head to head. And Jay Cutler now, since he's been with the Bears, is 1-10 against the Packers, and he's thrown 22 interceptions. Now, Lovie Smith couldn't beat Green Bay, and he got fired. And Jay Cutler can't beat Green Bay, and he got a big contract extension in the offseason.
let's not sugarcoat this. Jay Cutler is the highest paid player in the National Football League. Mm. I believe it's $54 million guaranteed, right? And you're not getting it done. And now, again, that's not just on Jay, because who's going to pay the price for that? Well, Phil Emery's going to be one of the guys that pays the price for it, because he's the one that gave the kid the contract. Mm. And imagine what that $54 million contract does to the Bears' cap over if you make the decision. And there are a couple interesting little outs in that contract, but they're going to have to carry a lot of dead money forward if they say, okay, you know, Cutler's not the guy. Now, somebody's going to have to pay for that mistake. And typically, it's the general manager and the head coach, and that's the way it is in the business. And it's unfortunate, but, you know, there's just no way that they should be in this situation. And I feel for Mark. I have my credit for him, because I watch him, you know, I watch him out there, and I can see his deal. We all get in these situations, and you just go, what is it that's gone bad on him? And he can't, the wheels have come off, and he can't write it. And they come out of a bye week against your traditional rival, 46-0 at halftime.
Oh, yep. That's awful. What about a couple of other bits of news, Jeff, or reaction to the games? Big Ben, who had been on fire, 12 touchdowns in two games. The Steelers lose to the New York Jets. Four turnovers by the Steelers, and the Jets coming in had only forced three turnovers the entire season. So that just goes to show what you always say, that's why they play the games. And Mark Sanchez was very good again on Monday Night Football, as Philadelphia beat Carolina 45-21.
You know what? I was really happy for Sanchez, you know, because of he was such an easy target when he was in New York. And the New York media is so tough anyway. You know, the butt fumble and all that stuff. And it was like the kid couldn't play at all. And then he gets a chance to, you know, catch his breath, regroup, get around better offensive players, frankly. And, you know, comes out and has played well 2 weeks in a row. And I think that's – I love those stories of redemption where a guy was tossed on the trash heap and ridiculed and, you know, made the butt of an ongoing joke. And then, you know, goes out last night and plays certainly well enough to win. And even though they didn't run the ball, which has got to be a concern if you're an Eagles fan, they're not running the football very well. But Sanchez made enough plays. And that young receiver they got, boy, oh boy, for a second-round draft choice, he is a good, good player, big and physical. And, you know, it's interesting. I did a little research on that. You know who his cousin is, don't you?
No, go on.
Huh?
No, I don't.
Jerry Rice. So, yeah, he's Jerry
wow.
Rice.
Oh, okay.
So he comes from a pretty good line of receivers.
Yeah. Yeah, that's some pretty good stock right there, right? One other bit of news, Jeff, and this would have been completely missed in a busy week of NFL. Marcus Lattimore retired. Didn't make it back from those devastating injuries he suffered in college.
Yeah, that really is a sad story, because the kid, before he got hurt in, you know, at South Carolina, was, you know, just a phenomenal player. We have a kid on our team, Eric Norwood, who played with him at South Carolina, then went on and played for the Panthers for 2 or 3 years, and now is up in the Canadian League. And I asked Eric the other day about Lattimore, and he said, Jeff, never seen a back. You know, he played in the SEC, whatever, a lot of great backs came through the SEC. He said, I never saw a back ever that could do the things that Marcus could do when he was healthy. And, you know, it's just again, such a tragic thing with this game, that particularly at that position, you know, when you start talking about knee injuries, it can be the end of it. I was really pleased to see that Coach Spurrier came out in the press and said that Marcus will always have a home at South Carolina, and they're going to get him involved in the coaching, I think, and you know, hopefully begin a life, you know, after his playing days and staying in football.
Yeah, absolutely, Jeff. We wish Marcus Lattimore all the best. So let's move on to week 11 in the NFL then and make our picks. And we start on Thursday night with the Buffalo Bills at the Miami Dolphins. Jeff, Miami lost Brandon Albert for the year, the left tackle. This is a tough game now. You're coming up against Marcel Darius, Mario Williams. The Bills have some offensive issues, but they have one heck of a defense, and they always match up well against Miami. So I can tell you right now, I'm going Buffalo.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. I watched the game very closely, the Buffalo game, and you know, obviously they are good up front. I mean, they're big and strong and physical, and Terry Hughes is a great pass rusher off the edge, and Darius, you know, obviously a first-round pick and three sacks last weekend. But I tell you what, they are struggling right now offensively. Mm. And, you know, they had – defensively, they had control of the Kansas City game, but offensively they could never stick the dagger in. You know, they had Kansas City on the run, but they couldn't – they just couldn't offensively finish them. And I think the heat in Miami and the fact that the Dolphins are home and the Dolphins are smarting a little bit after that loss to the Lions, I'm going to go Miami on this one. I know – that'll make you happy because you're such a Finn fan.
You've made my day. The Houston Texans at the Cleveland Browns. The Cleveland Browns were last in first place, sole possession of first place in the AFC North when Vinny Testaverde was their quarterback and Bill Belichick was still coaching up in Cleveland. So I'm probably leaning towards the Browns at home against Houston. How do you feel about this one?
Well, this is interesting because now the Cleveland Browns are using come see your first place Cleveland Brown in their advertisements. So they're pretty excited about being in first place. I don't know how long that's going to last, so they better enjoy it while they can. But I do think they can beat Cleveland at home. I think Hoyer's playing well enough. And I mean, Houston at home, I think Hoyer's playing well enough. And Patton's got that defense playing at a high level.
All right, so we're both going Cleveland in that one. The Atlanta Falcons at the Carolina Panthers. Two teams who have been disappointments in what has been a disappointing division. I mean, the NFC South right now, definitely only going to send one team to the playoffs, and that team could have a losing record or a 500 record. So who do you like in this one, Jeff?
Well, I think this one has the makings of my selection as the bad ball game of the week. Yeah. Because these are some bad football teams. Carolina, for as good as they were defensively last year, their secondary is just killing them right now. And you know, Kelvin Benjamin has showed flashes in the game about what he can be, but still too many drops, and they didn't run the ball very well yesterday against the Eagles. So I think it's at Carolina, and
yes,
that's the only reason I'm giving Carolina the edge in this one.
All right, I'm going to go Atlanta in that game. The Minnesota Vikings at the Chicago Bears. You would hope, and this is the reason I'm going to pick them. I'm going to pick Chicago to win here because you just hope there is some sense of urgency. If they lose this one, then I think their season completely goes down the pan.
Well, I'm not sure that that's not the case right now.
Right.
And the fact that they have played, they haven't won a home game this year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Soldier Field used to be a hard place to play. Now teams are coming in there and beating the Bears on a regular basis. The Vikings have a chance to go to 5-5.
Mm.
And Mike Zimmer has quietly got that team playing better football. So there's an awful lot at stake for both of these teams. Minnesota to keep improving. Chicago just has some ray of hope in this thing. And I believe Trestman will get these guys rallied up and they'll play well and their pride. He'll appeal to their pride. And certainly this week will be an uncomfortable week in Chicago because, you know, I'm 89 miles from Chicago here in South Bend and the everything in the media is, you know, what's wrong with the Bears, you know, and these Bears fans are passionate. So early in the game is going to be critical because if they don't play well early, the Boo Birds will be, you know, out in force.
Mm. So who are you taking?
I'm going to take Chicago. I truly believe that I just can't see them falling on their face a third time.
No. Cincinnati at New Orleans, tough road trip. I mean, even with the Saints are flawed, they're clearly a flawed team, but it's always a tough road trip to New Orleans, right, Jeff?
Yeah, it is. It's a tough city to play in. It's just the environment inside that dome is extremely loud. The passion of the fans. It's New Orleans, so there's, you know, too many distractions on the street. You know, and again, the thing that concerns me is I watch the Saints. I don't see them playing as a football team, right? You know, defensively they have breakdowns, then they'll play real well. Offensively they'll play real well, and then they'll just, you know, not move the football. There's no what we call continuity football being played by the Saints. And the Saints, I think, will win that division. But, man, I think they need to wake up and start playing New Orleans Saints football, where each side contributes and special teams. And but because right now I don't see that, but I will take the Saints in this.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Saints as well. I just point to the it's not decreasing pocket presence or awareness of Drew Brees, but there's a few times this year now, Jeff, where you've watched him throw passes and you're like, oh, you want that one back. And there was another one last week.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's just they don't look in sync to me. They don't look in sync defensively. You know, I thought they played pretty good defense in the game this past weekend, but then there were a couple situations against the run where, you know, they weren't in the right gaps. They didn't tackle well when they needed to tackle well. And then offensively, like you say, Brees just doesn't look like he's in sync or comfortable like he normally is in the pocket back there.
Denver at St. Louis. We know Jeff Fisher always has his team competitive. Austin Davis and the Rams gave the Cardinals, you know, pretty decent test last week, and then the Cardinals pulled away. But this is in St. Louis, so there could be some pass rush on Peyton Manning and the Broncos, but I'm going to go Denver with this one. Jeff, they're just the superior team, aren't they?
Well, here's the thing. It's in St. Louis. It's going to be indoors. Mm. And if you got a chance against Peyton, it's going to be at this time of year outdoors where the wind and the weather become more of a factor.
Yep.
Because he doesn't frankly have the arm strength that he used to have. But indoors, he can still spin it. And he's just got so many weapons around him. And I'm really pleased with the kind of the ascension that you see of Emmanuel Sanders really becoming a really viable guy inside that offense. So this would be a scary game for me if I'm the Broncos, because I would want to get a lead and then get Peyton out of there as fast as I can, because, you know, St. Louis can rush faster, and you just don't want to expose him to any hits if you don't have to. But, again, I agree with you. I think Denver will win it.
Our first game on Sky Sports on Sunday is a good one. It's Seattle at Kansas City, and it's a Seahawks team going on the road. We know they are a different proposition on the road. They have won three in a row, but I will stress that three in a row is the New York Giants, the Carolina Panthers, and the Oakland Raiders. They're now going to face a Kansas City team that has won six of their last seven after an 0-2 start. So this is a tough test for the Super Bowl champs, Jeff.
Yeah, because you're facing a pretty good defense. Mm. And you're facing that defense in Kansas City, in the environment. The weather's supposed to be cold this weekend in the Midwest. Andy Reid does, I think, an outstanding job. It was interesting watching the Buffalo game, and Buffalo had all the momentum in the game. And Andy was stoic on the sideline. There was no sense of panic. They just kept banging away. And he made a great call on the Charles touchdown run late in the game where, you know, he caught him in a blitz. And it was, quote, a pass down, and he ran a toss sweep, and they all got caught inside. And Jamal Charles, all he needs is a step, and he can outrun anybody on the field. Mm. You know, this one is, I think, going to be one of those really, really close football games. But I'm going to take, and this may surprise you, because I'm going to take Kansas City at home because it's Kansas City at home.
Yeah, yeah, that home field advantage, right?
Yep, I just think that the Arrowhead's a tough place to play. Kansas City will stack the box, obviously, because they got to stop the running game. For the first time all year, we saw what Marshawn Lynch can be last week when he rushed for 140 yards, and Russell Wilson, you know, did enough himself to run the football and throw the ball well enough to get out of there with a win. I just don't know if they can win. Again, if Kansas City can stack the box and win on first down, get them into second and long and third and long, then I think they got a chance to win the game by less than a touchdown, I think.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a tight game. I think it's going to be relatively low scoring. I'm going to bet on Russell Wilson to make a play late that gets swings at Seattle's way. So I'm going Seahawks in that one. Move on to San Francisco at the New York Giants. And just one glaring statistic from the Giants game against Seattle last week. You mentioned Marshawn Lynch's 140 yards and all those touchdowns. But the Giants, who were hanging tough for quite a while in that game, they gave up 350 rushing yards. Now, Jeff, if you give up 350 passing yards in today's NFL, that's, well, it's not okay, but it's accepted, and you know it happens sometimes. Surely alarm bells ring if you're a coach and you give up 350 rushing yards. Does that mean you're being whooped up front?
Well, let me throw another number at you.
Go on.
510, right? 510. That was the total yardage that Seattle had against the Giants. 510 yards. Now, that is a lot of yards. And when you say 300 of it come on the ground, that's an alarming amount of yards. And, you know, the Giants have not, you know, played good defense. And I thought Eli kept them in the game. But, you know, and Odell Beckham, I think, is going to be a star. I mean, a true star in the league. But I don't know, boy. I mean, like you say, alarm bells, that's alarm bells plus. And, you know, sirens and everything else, because no greater statistic about your physical toughness than your ability to stop the run. And I know for Tom Coughlin, who puts so much stock on being tough, that's got to be a concern. Got to be a concern.
Yeah, I expect the 49ers to come out and pound the rock. I'm going San Francisco to win this one.
What? Yeah, that's how the 49ers won in New Orleans. I mean, they banged around and committed themselves to the run. And I think that's what's going to happen in this one, too. Although, I will say, that is the toughest trip to make from the West Coast to the East Coast.
Yeah, we've mentioned this before.
You know, you look at it statistically, that the winning percentages of teams that have to go all the way across the country are not very high. But I just, I think the San Francisco Giants, or 49ers, excuse me, have so much to play for now. And they know they need to keep winning to keep their playoff hopes alive, that I'd be surprised if they go in there and don't come away with a win.
The Washington Redskins are playing host to the Division 1A Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I'm going to go Redskins.
I don't know. You know, this is one. This is my second nominee for bad ball of the week right here.
Jeff, they're BAD bad, as you say.
Yeah, I know, and with a capital B. So, you look at this thing and you just go, and I certainly didn't. Who foresaw the Bucs being this bad?
No, we didn't.
And I listened to Josh McCown's press conference the other day, and he breaks down in tears because he feels so bad for the organization, for the fans, for his family, for his teammates. I mean, 1-8, and you look at it and you go, and Lovey seems to be at a loss right now for how and why. And, the Redskins are the Redskins, which, you know, they show flashes that they can, you know, they have games where they play really well, and, you know, like the Cowboy game the other day, and then they'll have games where they just don't look like they show up. So I still say the Redskins are a better football team, so I'll take the Redskins.
All right, we'll take the Redskins there. Oakland at San Diego. So San Diego have been on a bit of a slide just lately, but here come the Raiders, who have lost 15 games in a row dating back to last season. And Jeff, that's really sad, actually, when you say it like that, because it's not even that surprising that they've lost 15 in a row. And it should be.
Yeah.
The Raiders.
Yeah. It's just, I watched the game. I watched the Raiders play the other day. And it's just really sad to watch. It's painful to watch. As a Raider fan, it's painful to watch because they seem, they don't play well in any phase of the game. You know, they don't play well defensively. They don't play well in the special teams. They don't play well, offensively. Derek Carr, I'm really, really concerned for him and that he's getting rushed so much now. He's starting to look a little bit like David did when David, his brother, was the first round pick of Houston. And really his career never went where it was supposed to go because he was the first 2-3 years of his life in the NFL. He's running for his life in the NFL. And that's what I see Derek Carr starting to do. And that can affect the young quarterback. So I think there's going to be massive changes, obviously, in the Raider organization in the offseason. They brought in all of those older players with the idea that they needed those veterans to get them over the hump and get them, a year and until they could continue to build the thing. But that's backfired on them. They're not playing. Nobody's playing well for them, young or old. And they're a team in disarray. So if you're San Diego, this is the kind of team you want coming down the interstate in California, because they're a chance for you to get healthy, and they got to get healthy if they're going to make the playoffs.
I know the answer, but I have to ask it, so it's all official. San Diego's your pick, then, Jeff.
After all that.
Yes, I'm going Raiders. Detroit, Arizona is a good game in the desert. And I wish it was. I actually, at one point, I wish this was our game on Sky Sports. And I was looking when we made the announcement for the other game, and I didn't realize they were in the same time slot. But we have Philadelphia at Green Bay, which also is a big game in the NFC. Two massive games there at the same time. So we couldn't show both of them. But we will bring you as much of Detroit and Arizona as we possibly can on Sunday night. But I actually fancy Arizona to keep rolling, Jeff. I'm thinking the Lions, as they are a feel-good story, but you can't win every game with a drastic fourth-quarter comeback. And Drew Stanton has shown us some stuff. I'm going to go Arizona to win this one.
Yeah, I'm going to take Arizona because I think Arizona's better defensively up front. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Larry Warford, one of the starters on the offensive line, went down for the Lions the other day. They're playing with some beaten-up guys anyway. So, you know, it's tough to play out there. It's an environment, you know, we're going to go out there for the Super Bowl. You're going to see it's a tough environment to play in. Mm. I think the Cardinals believe in Arians. I think they believe in one another. I think that they believe in Drew Stanton, and they play great defense. You know, they scored those three touchdowns late in the game to win the other day, and two of them were on defense. You know, Cromartie returns a fumble, and Peterson has a 30-yard interception return. So they're getting contributions from all the sides, which good teams do. And that's how you offset the loss of the quarterback. So I'm going to take Arizona over Detroit in the desert.
All right. So our second game on Sunday then is Philadelphia at Green Bay. It's in Green Bay. I'm still going to bank on Aaron Rodgers. I think, you know, maybe Philadelphia, you could argue, are the more complete team. But playing at home, I'm going to pick Green Bay. How do you see this one playing out, Jeff?
Well, you know what? Let me say this before we go any further. That Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Tony Romo. I mean, you talk about all of the great ones in the league right now. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's anybody that's better than Aaron Rodgers.
I'd agree with that. Yeah,
he can do so many things. He can avoid the rush. He can throw on the run. He can throw deep. He can throw short. He's got great composure in the pocket. He's a winner. Right now, I think he's the best quarterback in the National Football League, and he's at home. Philadelphia's going to have to travel into Green Bay, a tough place to play. If they don't get the running game going, then I think that, you know, the Packers will, although the Packers' secondary is a little bit suspect, I think the Packers will have, you know, a chance to stop them enough times that Rodgers and his crew will score enough points to win. So I'm going to take Green Bay at home.
All right, so that's that one for Green Bay. The New England Patriots and the Indianapolis Colts, Jeff. New England at Indianapolis.
Well, yeah, you know what? This is really an interesting one, too, because you got a young star in Andrew Luck going against the old veteran with the Super Bowl championships under his belt. And it's, I think, an interesting game in that New England is playing so well right now, and it's amazing that 5 weeks ago everybody had written them off, but they're 7-2 right now. And, you know, there's only one team in the league with more wins than them, and that's Arizona. Now, they have to go to Indianapolis, but it's indoors. I think that I'm not sold yet. I'm not sold yet on Indianapolis' defense.
Agreed, yeah.
Yeah. I really think that the Patriots will win this in a very close game. But you watch, Luck's going to have a day. I really think they'll have a 300-yard-plus day. But I think in the end, I think the Patriots will find a way to win.
Yeah, I'm going to pick New England as well. And Jeff, let's just wrap up the other one really quickly because I want to get a couple of questions in the mailbag before we finish. Pittsburgh at Tennessee. I'm going to pick Pittsburgh to bounce back.
Pittsburgh. Tennessee is really in trouble, and they can't protect Mettenberger. He looks very skittish in the pocket, you know, like you would expect a rookie to be. And frankly, they're not a good football team. Pittsburgh has to bounce back. They've got to keep pace with Cleveland, so this is kind of a must-win game for them. And, you know, certainly their pride's hurt a little bit, you know, losing last week like they did, so to the Jets. So I think Pittsburgh will win it.
All right, let's get into the mailbag then, get a couple of these questions done before we wrap up. First one isn't actually a question, but it's just a comment. Dan Price says, I would just like to say thanks to the NFL for their Remembrance Sunday efforts at Wembley Stadium. It was stunning. So that's everyone shares those thoughts, Dan. Here's a question, Jeff. This is Paul Lafferty says, Is Mark Trestman on the chopping block? Should Chicago fans have expected more?
Well, I don't know if he's on the chopping block. I think he's on the hot seat. Yeah. I think he's in a situation where he has to show that he can rally this football team. Now, if he can down the stretch, if they can put a little run together, then he can. He has then, I think, enough traction to go in and sit down with Mr. McCaskey and Phil Emery and say, listen, hey, listen, we didn't start well. We had a tough, you know, we had a tough situation, but at its worst, we were able to rally. I got the guys believing that they could play. We saw what the team that we're capable of. I heard Mark say this the other day. There's a good team in that locker room. We just haven't played good yet. Mm. And so if he can get them to play good down the stretch, I think he can save his job. If not, I would not be surprised if they do make a move in Chicago, because the Bears fans are just not going to put up with that.
This is a question, Jeff, that we get. We've had this one before a few times, but it's worth answering and reiterating as we go into this stretch run. It's a question we get at this time of year quite a bit as well. So it comes from Phil King. He says he loves the podcast, but he says, do teams with bad records throw games at the end of the season to get better draft picks next year? Tell us about that one, Jeff.
You know what? This is an interesting thing, because we hear it all the time. And you know what? In hockey, in pro hockey, it's almost an understood that you're gonna tank them at the end.
Oh, really?
Improve your draft play. Yeah, it's very interesting that, like right now, the Buffalo Sabres, I'm listening to their, and I don't know anything about hockey, but I'm listening to them talk, and they're saying, well, if we can keep it below this number of wins the rest of the season, then versus Edmonton, we're going to get the first round pick. Well, I mean, Christ, they haven't played but 5-10 games, and they're already talking that way. I think it's different in the NFL. I think it's different because you only have a week to play, you know, and that there's only 16 weeks. And remember now, the guys that are playing the game are trying to protect their careers. And one of the things you talk about when a team, for example, is out of the playoffs, you're in Jacksonville, you're in Oakland, you're one of these teams that's not going to the playoffs. Well, those players are putting their resume on tape when they go out there and play. And when you see a guy tanking it when there's, quote, nothing to play for, that gets put on that guy's resume. And so as you start thinking about free agency, and you know, these guys are interested in perpetuating their careers. They're not worried about who the first round draft choice is. They want to keep in this business. And the only way you stay in this business is to be productive and show that you can play. So I don't see that happening in the National Football League.
All right. Our last question, Jeff, comes from Stephen Tompkinson. And I can take the lead on this one, as I've been to them, but then you can certainly chip in. Feel free to add your 2 cents worth. But he says, how does the atmosphere compare at Wembley Stadium to a home game in America? Are we loud, or do we need to ramp it up some more? And my first thought on this is that, first of all, it's a mixed crowd. So it's not entirely everyone supporting the Jacksonville Jaguars. So first of all, any of these games, the crowd is split. So the noise level may be not what you would expect in Green Bay, or what you would expect in Houston if the Texans were playing a home game where there's 95% people supporting that team. But I do think we create a good atmosphere. I do think that we cheer in all of the right places. I do think that, I'll give you an example. So the middle game, so the game one is getting out of control. It's a blowout. In the second half, the fans started doing the Mexican wave. Well, that's just because they don't want to go home. If that was in America, they would have left. They don't want to go home, right, but the game isn't that interesting. In the middle game, which was a good game and a close game, there was no Mexican wave all day. And on the third game, in the second half, the fans started doing the Mexican wave again. So I think this is a knowledgeable group, and I actually think they were insulted on air by Tony Siragusa, who said on Fox TV, oh, these fans, there's nothing they love more than a good punt or a field goal or a kickoff. Well, we're way past that, Tony. It's not 1986. So we're maybe not quite as noisy as they are in America, but I certainly feel like we are a knowledgeable group.
Well, I don't think there's any question about that. And you make a great point, Neil, because we're talking about now, you're talking about NFL fans. You're not talking about just Lions fans or Dolphins fans or Cowboy fans or Jaguar fans or Raider fans. You're talking about NFL fans. And so, obviously, it's not going to be as impassioned as it would be if you're at Arrowhead, for example. Mm. But what comes across on the television, and I think it's become extremely clear, because I was listening to talk radio yesterday, sports talk radio yesterday, and both of the people that I listened to when they talked about the Wembley game said it is evident that they do love football in the UK, and it is evident that these games are here to stay. And so now that's become accepted over here, that it's not just these one-off deals where what's the NFL doing sending games over there. I think fans here are starting to recognize that there is a passionate, knowledgeable fan base in the UK that will support teams and will support the games, and these things are more than just one-off circus events. Mm. And like you said, you see the fans and what comes through the television sets here, and I cannot wait for the opportunity to actually be a part of one of these things.
Yeah, you really
love it. Is that there really is, like I say, an impassioned, knowledgeable, you know, fanatical fan base for the NFL. 500,000 people on Regent Street.
Mm.
500,000 people on Regent Street. Don't tell me that they're not interested in the National Football League. All the UK fans need to do is just keep doing what they're doing. Keep following the game. Keep tuning in to Sky. Keep listening to the podcast. Keep going to the Wembley games. And it's only going to get more fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's a positive note to end on, Jeff. I was going to say I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing and keep doing this podcast. But I was just thinking, actually, Robbie Williams left Take That. So they're actually one down and they're going on tour next summer. They're only next door. I might just go and just double check. You know? No? All right, then. Fair enough. I don't want you choking on your coffee there, Jeff. Let's leave it.
Oh, you kill me.
Let's leave it there, shall we?
Hey, you know what? You know, it's amazing. I'm just thinking now. It's going to be less than 3 weeks, and you and I will be sitting in that same studio doing it together. This time, I hope I don't fall off my chair. Was it you or me that fell off the chair?
It was me. My chair just collapsed. Do you remember? It just collapsed. Listen, it's going
to
be a lot of fun.
Spend a few quid and get some new chairs in there.
Yeah, the only danger when we're in the same studio as Jeff is going to be keeping it under an hour, but we'll have a lot of fun with it anyway, so... All right.
Hey, I cannot wait to get back.
No, we're counting the days. Good stuff, Jeff. I'll speak to you next week.
All right, mate. Take care.
That's Jeff Reinbold. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with skysports.com and NFL UK. We're sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. We are a USP content production, and we will speak to you all next week if I haven't managed to force my way into Take That. See you then. Bye-bye. Thanks, Jeff.
Awesome stuff, man.
Good stuff, man. All right.
All right, brother. You take care.
Take care. Good luck in those playoffs.
All right, man. Thank you.
Cheers, Jeff. Bye-bye.